Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. For the time being, we have with us Mr. John Quirk, who has worked as a consultant for intelligence agencies in the past. And today he is, of course, involved in asset recovery and travels around the country. There are real problems, apparently, with many people, with various bank and banking organizations, receiving deposits and then not making them available to people. And you need somebody who knows the wherewithal how to track these things down. Mr. Quirk, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's always good to be with you.
Why don't you give us a little of the background of the problem that's really out there? I don't think most people are really even aware of it until, of course, something happens to them and their bank deposits.
Well, what's happened is fraud and international fraud has really increased tremendously. It's a result of the prosperity in the world, and it's we spend very, very little money on it. In fact, there was an article in USA Today about 10 days ago that kind of indicated the FBI has reduced most of its white-collar crime cases, and the government, since 9/11, has focused more on terrorism than, say, bank fraud, embezzlement, and international fraud.
All right, fine. So the government isn't looking after it, and so if there is bank fraud, what does the average individual do?
Well, the average individual, and fraud is increasing by mainly international people scamming Americans to the tune of millions of dollars in fake gold projects, fake homeland security projects, that's the latest one, all kinds of things. As you know, many Ghanaians and Nigerians send letters to people trying to scam their money. A lot of people, through greed, think they're going to get a 400% return, and they send millions of dollars overseas, and then the people disappear with it.
Well, and I think the one that usually is they want to get your bank number so that they deposit a number so they can put money in your account. There's $400 million they've got, want to smuggle out of Nigeria or whatever it is.
Yeah, they have about 20 different kinds of letters. The U.S. Postal Service destroys about 7 million letters a year, but then the Nigerians have switched to internet fraud, saying, there's $25 million in your name, just give me $10,000, and so on. And then there's a lot of investment fraud. There's many intermediary American fraudsters that lure people into fake investments, and then the money goes overseas, and they never see it again. And this is called multi-jurisdictional fraud. It's very difficult for law enforcement, American or Canadian law enforcement, to spend a lot of money and track these international fraudsters down. The other thing is most of them put their money in the banking havens. These are Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, Bahamas, Bermuda, the Cook Islands, Guernsey, and so on. These are the places that have banking secrecy laws. And as a result, it's not only difficult, say, for a lawyer, it's very difficult for government to locate the money and recover it.
I know. The Guernsey, that's in the British Channel. What about the Isle of Man? Is that a haven as well?
Yeah, Isle of Man has about 400 banks. That's between Ireland and Scotland.
Oh, I see.
About a 40-minute ride from Dublin, and that's also a banking secret haven.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment here with Mr. John Quirk talking about, well, banking secrecy and this asset management recovery. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. John Quirk, who teaches in Paris at a diplomatic school. He lectures on intelligence and intelligence matters. I had an opportunity to meet him personally on several occasions. He actually has a home in Normandy, in northern France. He has a home in Florida. At least he did until recently when he sold it. But a fascinating job he has, and that's asset recovery. Apparently there are a lot of scams out there. In fact, hardly a month goes by when I don't get a couple of letters from Nigeria or from Palestine or from Dubai or something, and somebody's got all this large sum of money and they want to get it out of the country. And if I'll just, of course, I'll give them my bank deposit, they'll put all that money in my bank, and I just have to give them the number, and then I'm going to get 10% or 30% or whatever it would be. And it's obviously a scam. Unfortunately, once they get your bank account number, why, the next thing you know, there's nothing left in your bank account, or there are all sorts of other things Mr. Quirk has talked about. You just invest overseas, $10,000, you're going to get $40 million. Of course, that old adage, if it seems to be too good to be true, it probably is. And aren't there an awful lot of people who, through greed, get into these foolish situations?
Yes, if you break it down, believe it or not, large numbers of religious groups fall for these things. Protestant, Catholic, denominational, they take the church money, they think they're going to get more money back, and of course they're scammed by people who say they are religious people. And then the next largest group are very wealthy individuals that think they're going to get a big return on their money. And they're looking to invest money in legitimate things. Almost all of them are overseas. They invest, they wire transfer the money, and they never see or hear the people again. And now there are companies that are starting to do this. They're looking to both avoid taxes and get tremendous profits. So you're absolutely right. It's greed.
And, of course, this is what the hedge funds do, but at least you have somebody there who hopefully knows what they're doing. So basically then what happens, let's imagine that I was foolish enough to have made one of these investments and sent $30,000 or $40,000 overseas, which I do not have, but let's imagine I was foolish enough to do that. What would the next step be, and how would you go about approaching that?
Well, what we do, there's a new provision in the government. It's called Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty, MLAT for short. And it's a treaty that the United States has with most countries of the world, not all.
Hold that thought right back, and we'll be right in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Quirk was simply talking about the fact that there are treaties now that will allow certainly mutual assistance to recover assets that have been taken and smuggled into foreign countries or into banking havens. And so we were taking the theoretical example of if I had been foolish enough to send $10,000 to somebody who was going to give me $40 million in return for it, and I hope I never will be. Even if I were, why my wife wouldn't let me do it. But assume we did, and this is happening so frequently today. So what was this now? Some sort of a treaty which at least gives our people some opportunity?
Yeah, what it is, people that are defrauded have to make a complaint to a federal agency, one of our alphabet soups, FBI, Secret Service, DEA, IRS, and so on. Now, the beauty about MLAT is that you don't need an arrest. You don't need a conviction. You just need a commitment by the federal agency that they're going to investigate. And then after a period of time, you go to a U.S. attorney. The U.S. attorney makes a request to the Justice Department MLAT lawyer in Washington. And we have a lawyer in the Justice Department for almost all countries, Liechtenstein, Switzerland, and so on. These are the best lawyers in government. They've gone to Harvard and Yale and Notre Dame and many from Stanford and UCLA, and they make a request to their counterpart, let's say in Luxembourg or Liechtenstein, a better example, Switzerland, and their counterpart freezes the bank accounts pending the outcome of the prosecution or pending the outcome of how dangerous it might be for the people to move the money. Now, it's not all that simple. There, a lot of work has to be done. And what we're finding in most federal agencies, they are just overwhelmed with terrorism, foreign counterintelligence, white-collar crime. So what we do is we write the narrative with the client. We do a timeline on the fraud, how many times the fraudsters contacted them. We do biographies. We do detailed backgrounds on the fraudsters. Most of them are overseas. We obtain documents. But the most important thing we do for both the client and the government is we locate the assets. So what's happening, you mentioned $40,000. The government would not take a case for $40,000. The criteria is going up from $3 million to $10 million to $20 million. So the more money that the people are out, the more likely it is that the Justice Department will go ahead and do the MLAT. Now, one of the federal agencies may say, hey, look, it will investigate, but they have 18 months to decide whether they're really going to investigate and prosecute. And by doing some of the work with the client, it accelerates what's happening. What is really needed now in the United States is more economic crime units on the state and the local level, because the feds are overwhelmed. SEC has all kinds of cases, FBI, IRS, Treasury, almost all of our 63 federal law enforcement agencies now have a criminal investigative division. But they've also been restricted because of the Privacy Act. They've been restricted on getting information and subpoenas. You know, the ACLU is always saying the government is invading their privacy and there's issues of privacy. And actually, in the international area, the way it's worked out, there's actually more protection for international criminals. The United States is the lead country in going after foreign fraudsters. Countries like Mexico and Canada and even England and Europe just don't have the resources that the United States has. And over the few years, there have been rumors that the intelligence community has set up offices in most of these banking havens, but it's probably more for terrorism, drug dealing, and targeting people like the Sicilian and the Russian mafia. What's happened, individual entrepreneur fraudsters are stealing most of Americans' money through a variety of different frauds. And eventually, the government is going to have to address it, because it's a recent, the last 5 to 10 years, it's really a recent phenomena. And many, many Americans are losing their life savings, their health care. There's a domino effect. It affects marriages, and it affects living and corporations. And the foreigners that are doing this are very knowledgeable. America is their number one target because we're so wealthy.
I know I've had some of these calls. I'm sure they were from India, you know, and I was just so fortunate they were going to give me a $100,000 gift, and all I had to do was simply, you know, give them a little bit of information about me, you know. And I suppose if it seems to be too good to be true, people should be wise enough not to get involved. But I think there's an element of greed in all of us.
Yes, and what they should watch out for are these individual Americans that are brokers. They know it's fraud, and they put people in these horrible fraud investments. And then they tell people, oh, I don't have to be licensed, which is a lie. The SEC can go after them. They say, I don't get a big commission. That's also a federal violation. The SEC or the FBI can nail them on it. And, of course, when they move money overseas, and the fraudster takes the money, that is, of course, money laundering. So when we do a criminal complaint, we add conspiracy to defraud, Hobbs Act, financial matters, that's under the FBI, and sometimes SEC violations, which are both regulatory and criminal. And then, of course, at the end, you add money laundering, and American money laundering laws are draconian. They're perfect to prosecute these fraudsters.
No, but how can we prosecute, say, but if they're over in France or certainly over in India?
Well, we've prosecuted Israeli army people. We prosecuted, I won't mention two or three different religious groups that are involved in it. We prosecuted Nigerians, Ghanaians, and so on. You have to track them overseas. You have to work with local law enforcement, and you have to do detailed backgrounds on them, because some of the criteria that our U.S. attorney looks at, and this is why database and investigative skills are important, is that if they have a prior criminal record, if they have a long list of bankruptcies, Chapter 13s and 7s, if they have a very poor educational background, these are some of the criteria that we use to get the U.S. attorney interested in these cases.
Well, now, are these actually prosecuted in this country, or are they prosecuted in, say, in Nigeria or in Israel?
No, it depends on the word venue. Venue means where does the fraud take place, or where does the fraud wind up? In almost all cases, we prefer to work with the U.S. attorneys to prosecute the cases. Our laws are tougher, and then you get into multi-jurisdictional. In all of our embassies around the world, we have legal attachés, FBI, Secret Service, Homeland Security, and they cooperate, sharing information back and forth. So the United States really has a leg up because we have so many overseas bases, where in the embassy, the coordinator would be the FBI agent, Secret Service, Customs, Immigration. We have all of those people in foreign embassies, whether they're in China or Lithuania or the Ukraine. And that's one of their jobs, is to work with the local police on tracking these people down. And with our job, we work with law enforcement internationally, whether it's Scotland Yard or Interpol, which is mainly a database. The French have a very good financial police. The Chinese, believe it or not, are starting to build up because they've had a lot of Chinese fraudsters. And I'm just telling you that fraud, international fraud and corruption, I believe are greater threats and a bigger problem than even terrorism.
Well, now, what sort of response do you get? In other words, you get a 30 or 40% or 20% of recovery rate? Once you get hold of the guy, he's going to say, gee, I don't have any money.
Well, no, we locate the money. We find the money. And we do a preliminary investigation to make sure he hasn't spent all the money. And most of the money is in the banking havens. Isle of Man, like you mentioned, Jersey, Cyprus. All of these cultures, more or less, have a favorite place to hide money. The Russian mafia and fraudsters love to put their money in Cyprus. The Nigerians love to put their money in Guernsey. American crooks like to put their money in Bermuda or the Bahamas. So some of these cultures follow all of this. The Chinese and Australians, they like to put their money out in Vanuatu in the Cook Islands. So what we do is, we spend money on tracking the people, locating the assets. When we get all of our clients' money back, we take a percentage. We take anywhere from 15 to 25%. And it's been a very good business for us. The problem is we're just a very small boutique, and we can only take about 10 cases a year.
All right. Well, now, what about banking secrecy? I mean, at one time, you did have banking secrecy in Switzerland, some of these other places. Is that pretty much passé?
Yeah, it's passé. Well, they have laws about banking secrecy, which basically are this. In their country, you're not allowed to wiretap, open mail, tape people when you interview them. In fact, in some cases, if you go in and ask a Swiss banker information, they call the police, the financial police, on you. So what's happened in many cases, banking secrecy, especially in Switzerland, has gone by the wayside. The Swiss lied about all the money that the Holocaust victims had, and they got caught. And that's kind of unraveled banking secrecy. There's only three or four places that are really, really secret to put your money in. One is Liechtenstein. One is Guernsey, one is Luxembourg, and one is in the Cook Islands.
All right, fine.
Most of the other places, like the Bahamas and the Bermuda and Antigua, have complied with American money laundering laws, and they can get in trouble if they take dirty money.
Hold that thought. All right, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is John Quirk, and we're basically talking about banking secrecy and if these things are really, really real. And, of course, the Cook Islands, the Guernsey, Luxembourg, and Lithuania seem to be places that at least still have an element of banking secrecy. All right, but then can you actually track the money down in those places as well by one means or another?
Yes, we can find money in almost any country. And I'll just, without giving away too much of our strategy or methods, if a country has developed a computer, good fiber optics and databases, we can find the money. Now, I'll give you an example. 5 years ago, if we needed to, say, find a bank account in Avignon, France, or, say, Kyoto, Japan, we would have to have an investigator, one of our staff, go there, either work with the local police or try to penetrate the bank and get information the old-fashioned way. It could take weeks or months. Today, we can collect a lot of information from satellite. So we're able to get the bank account number, the bank balance, and once we get that, depending on the country we're in and what we're doing from the United States, because we're somewhat restricted because of the laws here, we're able to pretex into the bank, get the wire information, customer service information. And then the information that we can't get when we work with local law enforcement or the feds here, they have the power of subpoena. So we have a very good marriage. We get information that they can't get. They need a subpoena. And we are able to get information working with them because they have power of subpoena. So there are new gatekeepers on these bank accounts. Many of these countries, like Liechtenstein and Cook Islands, are putting more blocks on trying to access information. But then we also, because of our intelligence backgrounds, we more than investigative backgrounds, we do UMINT, which is basically working with a source in the country or a source in the bank that supplies us with information.
All right, so it's major is to find out where the money is so that the person will be able to recover what's been stolen from them, and then you simply somehow or other use diplomatic techniques to seal that bank account so the crooks can't take it out?
That's right. That's what MLAT is for, Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty. And what it is, you see, American lawyers are used to going and spending a lot of money on the client's money, and they get a judgment. And that's great. But the problem is, a civil judgment does not always travel well overseas. And it costs a lot more money. For instance, if you try to do a civil litigation in Liechtenstein, you could spend a couple $100,000, and in the end, you'll lose, because Liechtenstein's banking secrecy is sacrosanct. So to get money in Liechtenstein, you almost have to have a murder case or a terrible case before the Liechtenstein government cooperates with you. And many of the banks lie. Many of the banks lie, even if you have the intelligence and you have the documents to substantiate your case, the banks lie. We had a case in Luxembourg where a fake insurance company run by Belgians bilked American seniors out of $20 million. We found the money in Luxembourg. We opened up a negotiation. The bank completely lied, although we had a source in the bank and we had the documents. And what we did is we went forward with an MLAT. Now, there is no real formal agreement between Luxembourg and the United States, but we still have a little clout there. And the judge, the magistrate that freezes the account, sided with the United States and not the local bank. So if the judiciary in the country and the police are honest and they understand the treaty that the Americans have set up, then we can have success. Now, England is using an MLAT formula, France is using it, Germany, because so much money is flowing out of those countries as a result of fraud.
All right, fine. So our guest, of course, is Mr. John Quirk, and his avocation, now that he's he still is, of course, teaching at a diplomatic school in Paris, and has a home in Normandy and lives part-time in the United States. is tracking down overseas assets. And if anybody has any questions, well, you can always give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, I'm sure these bad guys are pretty unhappy with you actually tracking down the money that they've stolen, aren't they?
Yes, well, you know, traditionally, white-collar criminals are not violent, but now they have kind of a tendency to be angry when we seize all of their money. So it depends on the people. These are not Russian mafia. These are not Italian or Sicilian mafia. These are not drug dealers. These are basically white-collar criminals who've made a lot of money scamming people. And we try to keep all of our operations covert and quiet. When we seize the money, usually they don't even know the clients that we work for. They can't hire a law firm to block it because most of them have criminal records anyway, and they've committed a crime. They usually try to go to ground. Lately, we're seeing another tactic by them. They're trying to negotiate, and they pay the clients the money back, and they use that as a defense against their criminal prosecution. So I can't tell you whether it works or not, but some of these people have so much money, they scam on a regular basis. We're working now on an Indian boiler room, which has 20 to 30 people just targeting Americans to bring in $1 million to $3 million on each investment. So if we locate 10 or 15 for our clients and we seize it, they often don't care because they've got $150 million in the bank that they're scamming other people. One of the scamsters, we are convinced he's already a billionaire. Mainly targeting Americans.
Of course, if they pay back, do you back away from criminal prosecution?
Well, we're not the criminal prosecution people. The FBI or the SEC go ahead with the prosecution usually because they're not interested in getting the client's money back. They're only interested in the violations and prosecuting these people. Now, the government does have an asset forfeiture department, but it's very weak. They don't enforce it. We just put a religious leader, helped put a religious leader in prison, and we seized his money. And he was supposed to pay more back. The government ordered him to pay back. But there's no real enforcement method. They can't put him back in jail. They can't seize his bank accounts. They can in terrorism and drug cases, but not in major fraud cases.
Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I'm wondering, I'm waiting to hear what the World Court has to do with this.
Does the World Court have anything to do with this?
Not really. I don't want to expose my conservative background too much, but I lived overseas 25 years, and I don't have a lot of faith in either the World Court, the United Nations, UNESCO, or things like this. The World Court focuses mainly on criminal cases like in Serbia, ethnic cleansing, and they're often slow to do this, and they don't really get into embezzlement and fraud, but they certainly should, and the United Nations certainly should, because this is what we call multi-jurisdictional. It's America to Bahamas, Bahamas to England, and so on and so forth. And you'll see more and more as a growing problem. The United Nations would probably be reluctant to get into it because they don't want to offend a lot of their member states, and they certainly don't like MLAT. They don't like, they vote against the United States 75% of the time, and they certainly will not embrace the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty.
All right, but these treaties are there, and they're enforced with many of the countries, aren't they?
Yes.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Mr. John Quirk. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Mr. Quirk has a fascinating job of traveling all over the world, tracking down people's money that's been gotten by fast-talking crooksters, and that's really what they are. But they're all around. Beware. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and you know, one of the things you learn as you get older is that greed is a terrible thing, and time again you hear about people being taken in by somebody who promises them a fabulous fortune if they'll just invest in their project. And when I was young and foolish, I used to do that sort of thing, never with overseas projects, but I know people who have, and whether it be a General Yamamoto's treasure or what it would be, or Admiral Yamamoto, I think was the name of it, Yamamoto, yeah, it's his treasure that was supposedly sequestered away somewhere in the Philippines, and people were, you know, absolutely certain that these treasure hunters were going to get it. Well, what sort of a scam do they have over in India where they have this boiler room going?
Well, they promise Americans a 25 to 400% return on their investment. That's one. Another one is the new Homeland Security scam that they bring in money from overseas, but Homeland Security is blocking it, and they can't pay the money back. There are scams out of Panama that the Indians run, scams out of England. We have one scam where we have a guy sitting over a huge trunk full of $100 bills, and he's pointing his finger at it, telling the American, you can have part of this. It's undeclared money. There's gold scams, diamond scams. There's the most common scam, it sounds good, is an investment scam. You give your money to these people, and they guarantee you that you'll have a 400% return. They send you phony bank documents from HSBC, Bank of America, Lloyd's of London, banks in Panama. They dupe the people. We just had a case where a number of people in the United Nations lost their life savings to a combination of Africans and Bahamians. They made these people go to Spain, and they demanded that they buy them laptop computers and Rolex watches. And they often blame the Americans for not having more patience, and they keep asking for money. They set up meetings in the United Arab Republic, in Zurich, in New York, and say, I'm definitely coming tomorrow. You fly there and meet me, and we'll have your bank checks ready. Of course, the people go there, and they don't meet anybody. It is a venal, evil system that many of these people are doing. They're laughing at Americans, which gets me angry and gives me an incentive. And even though greed plays into it, a lot of Americans are continuing to be victimized.
Well, I think
and these people have a whole coterie of fake documents, fake back documents. They make the people sign contracts.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk, talking about asset forfeiture. And if you have a telephone number or website you'd like to get out so people would know how they can get in touch with you if they happen to be a victim of something of this sort.
Sure. Here's our phone number. It's 561-703-3671. And let me give you our website, because it has our articles that I've written on MLAT, and it has our backgrounds and some of our testimonials from directors of intelligence services as well as our clients. It's www.assetlocationinternational.com. Assetlocationinternational.com.
Okay, asset locationinternational.com. And so our guest is John Quirk. If you have any questions at all, was there anything else that we should talk about that? Maybe we could talk about some of the things that are going on in the world today, unless there's something specific we should be covering that we haven't thought of so far.
Well, you know what this all is, it involves financial intelligence collection. And it's really a new discipline. It's, you're used to military intelligence collection. You're used to nuclear information. Are the Iranians going to build a bomb or not? Political intelligence, whether we're going to attack a country, or whether terrorists are going to attack us. But financial intelligence is coming to the forefront. And it involves not only the collection of intelligence for governments, but on individuals. And, for instance, people, and I know you are concerned, Stan, about a number of problems, economic problems in the country. the amount of money we're spending on the Iraq War, the fact that Latin America is going left and nationalizing a lot of oil and minerals, the fact that oil prices are up, that the dollar is taking a beating, all of that is financial intelligence collection. And it's important that you have foreknowledge, like Sun Tzu, the great Chinese, my hero, he says foreknowledge avoids war and can prepare people for avoiding a disaster, in the book Art of War. So financial intelligence is a collection of both overt and covert information, and it's also collecting intelligence for whether you're going to buy a car or whether you're going to buy a house or whether you're going to go overseas and invest in Poland or whatever. And because of the internet, because of fiber optics and databases, more and more people will be getting into financial intelligence collection. In fact, if somebody wanted to start a company in that today, they'd probably make a lot of money servicing certain corporations or clients.
Well, certainly the way the dollar is going, and why I think that the companies that have not bought some sort of a future contract to protect themselves are going to be in real trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly as the dollar begins to slip down, the value of the dollar is decreasing as far as international things are concerned. Here in America, it won't be that apparent, but it certainly will be when traveling or working overseas. And so I really believe, in very, very difficult times. My concern, of course, is that the rising price of energy is going to have a profound impact on our economy, and people won't have the money for buying things as they have in the past, because they're going to be putting it into oil and to electricity and all the other energy things that they need to have for everyday living. And this can begin to have a tremendous impact on the world economy as a whole.
Yes, and I don't have a crystal ball, but I'll give you an example. Most likely, after the November elections, the United States is going to take military action against Iran. We've talked about this on a previous show. Now, what's going to be interesting, if it's a short-term kind of airstrike, naval and airstrike, it probably won't have that much effect on the economy. However, if the Iranians retaliate and the war spreads, say, to Israel, and the Iranians conduct terrorism against us, you will see not so much the dollar slide or interest rates, but you'll see the stock market go down, you'll see oil and energy prices go up dramatically. And right now, it wouldn't affect us, even though we're spending $400 billion, I think, on Iraq, and another trillion on the space program and infrastructure and highways, it wouldn't affect us. However, because of what you said about energy, and if we do go to war with Iran, and it drags out 2 to 3 weeks, then all of those things, high interest rates, the war in Iraq, debt, the dollar, as you say, the problems we're having in Latin America, and I'm not an economist, but I think it would seriously damage our economy, and it would take us a long time to recover.
And I certainly concur. Of course, you've done a lot of work on Venezuela, and you're very, very concerned about Hugo Chavez, who seems to be using his bully platform as the president of Venezuela to really mobilize all of South America against the United States. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, and I lived in Venezuela a long time. I've written articles. I investigated Mr. Chavez back in 1998 for the intelligence community. He is an evil man. He's just not an ignorant man. And he has a plan. He spent $25 billion last year on anti-American programs. Now you have a drug dealer in charge of the Bolivian government. Brazil is left-wing. Chavez is funding labor unions and student groups in Panama. He's funding radical elements in Mexico. He's giving money to left-wing Marxist dictators in Argentina, in Ecuador, and other places. He is a sop for Fidel Castro. And what you're going to see is what started last week in Bolivia. They're going to start nationalizing American oil and mineral companies. They may not kick them out, but they're going to tax them to death, and they're going to demand unbelievable commissions So they're taking all of that money from American companies and they're throwing it into left-wing Marxist organizations. Chavez has even tried to form eventually a united military that would fight the United States. I mean, it sounds ludicrous, but he is spending money and he's winning in Latin America. We are losing. We are disengaging from Latin America. We are seeing democratically elected Marxist presidents. I mean, it is shocking to think that the Bolivian president, who just nationalized all the oil and mineral companies and natural gas companies last week in Bolivia, he is a representative of the cocaine dealers. And it's the same thing that's happening all over Latin America. There's a tremendous move to the left, and it is going to be the soft underbelly problem of the United States. I think it's a bigger national security problem than Iraq or Iran.
And it's
on our border, and we don't seem to be engaging. We are disengaging from Latin America.
And, of course, one of the things that's so disturbing is Hugo Chavez would appear to be developing a relationship with China so he can sell his oil to China. And we need that oil for, they're really, I think, what, 34th major oil producer supplier to the United States.
Well, the Chinese just finished building a railroad in Venezuela. They're building a major pipeline to take our oil away. They're building two mega ports in Maracaibo and La Guaira. They control both ends of the Panama Canal through their front company, Hutchinson Wompa, both ends of the Panama Canal. And they've just signed all kinds of agreements with the CARICOM countries in the Caribbean. Those are Bahamas, Grenada, Jamaica, Guyana, and I believe Antigua. And they've signed four agreements. One is for port facilities, so they can control the ports. One is for military, believe it or not. One is for business, and one is for education. The Chinese are reaching all through Latin America and the Caribbean. They're building hospitals and schools and sports arenas. And, of course, the weakness in the Chinese is they don't have enough oil. So they want to do two things, control all the shipping and port facilities, and they want to push us out of the Pacific. And we're not going. So the Latin countries that are ruled by dictators now, Bolivia, maybe Brazil, certainly Venezuela, and the rest of the dominoes that will fall in the next 5 to 10 years, are certainly pro-Chinese, and it's not just about oil. The Chinese want to have a base against us. So it's not just all friendly trade with China. I don't trust the Chinese. I don't see them democratizing, and people like Chavez and Castro are forming alliances with them.
Well, Chris,
not a good situation.
Well, certainly it looks like the leftist candidate is going to win in the next presidential election there in Mexico as well.
Yes, and he's funded by Chavez. Chavez is also funded, they got caught last year, radical elements of the Mexican army. He's funding and building a major radio station and propaganda outlet that goes all through Latin America. And the major theme is not news, it's anti-Americanism. It's unbelievable that we permitted this to happen. I think because we're overstretched, we're probably going to be building up our Pacific bases in the next 10 years in response to China's growing power. And it's the United States has allies, but in many cases recently we stand alone.
Well, of course, the thing is, it's almost as if China's beginning to encircle us with their bases in the Caribbean, their bases in South America, and even moving now into increasing relationships with Mexico as well. So I think that the average American lives in a fool's paradise if they don't see that the progressive encirclement of the United States have retaliation against our influence in the Pacific.
Yes, and what they could eventually do, they'll have to be careful. They could eventually, Chavez is already invited. We've had rumors, they're not confirmed, that Chavez wants the Chinese and Cubans to help him build a missile base. They are trying to build a signals intelligence base out of, which would connect the old Lourdes base in Cuba, which listens in on the southern United States. I think they can go up as far as Washington, D.C., and Chavez has offered to help them build that. I don't trust Chavez. Al-Qaeda trains there. Hezbollah is there. The drug cartel FARC has a big office in Caracas. And he's going to start pushing the envelope with the United States.
But
I think that a crisis is looming.
But, of course, doesn't Iran have fairly close relationships with Chavez as well?
Tremendous economic agreements. And, you know, we constantly hear about Iran trying to make a deal with the Russians to enrich uranium. There are Iranian nuclear engineers, physicists, and scientists in the Venezuelan nuclear reactor facility outside of Caracas. It's called IVIC. And there are many, many Iranians that are traveling on Venezuelan passports. And the Iranians, with the crisis that is looming with them, have a strong ally in Chavez to possibly launch terrorist attacks against the United States.
But, of course, the thing that would worry me, John, would be if we were to actually launch either cruise missile or air attacks on the Iranian missile bases, it would seem to me that if I was Iran, I would station intermediate-range missiles, you know, in Venezuela.
Well, either that or there could be the possibility that they've already smuggled in weapons of mass destruction. Certainly Chavez will not do it overtly because he knows the United States would retaliate and we would destroy that country. But I believe, is doing it covertly through a number of different terrorist individuals. Some of them don't have any names that are operating there. And whether he has a nuke or a chemical weapon, we don't really know. We know that he has expanded the biological warfare program at IVEC in association with the biological warfare program that Castro has. So they are not afraid of the United States. They think they can bring the United States down to its knees. And they are doing everything politically, and they're doing everything covertly to damage us.
Well, you know,
and I'll tell you, watch Venezuela. It's going to be our biggest national security threat.
One of the things that's always puzzled me is why, here about 2 years ago when there was a coup in the country and Chavez was deposed, why we didn't immediately recognize the new government and delegitimize Chavez.
Well, this is this kind of almost puritanical hyperbole the United States has. If a person is elected democratically, we believe democracies don't go to war with each other. There's never been a case in the world where democracies have gone to war with each other. And we have a very strict guideline that we will not overthrow democratic elected governments. And even though there was fraud in the election, and even though Jimmy Carter went down and sanctioned the election, said it was legitimate, and then he got a $2 million grant from Chavez, in this country we call it a bribe, he probably was democratically elected with about 50 to 60% of the vote. That is very hard for our policymakers in the State Department, Pentagon, CIA, to do anything. In the old days, the CIA would have overthrown him, okay, because he is a national security threat. And today, we just don't have that ability, and we would never get approval from Congress, even conservative members of Congress that would like to see Chavez go knows that he's democratically elected, and the Cubans know this. The Cubans have really beat our brains out in terms of counterintelligence and guiding Chavez through his political campaigns. The Cubans run his intelligence service, DISIP, and they run his military.
All right.
And they are entrenched. It's impossible to get them out of there now.
All right, well, let's go to Mike calling from Phoenix. We've only got a moment or two. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question?
Yeah, hi. Within the last 2 years, the head of the Securities Exchange Commission went down to Colombia to meet with the FARC to find out why they were not any longer laundering their money through the New York Stock Exchange and through Wall Street. Here and more recently, President Bush has announced that he'd like the Chinese to do the security with respect to potential nuclear risks at the port of Bahama, in the Bahamas. Now, you know, we're talking about Hugo Chavez and the Chinese and all these risks in foreign lands, but How about assessing the risk right here in our own country from internationalists like Mr. Bush?
All right, well, do you have any thought on that, Mr. Quick?
Well, in terms of the Bahamas, the Chinese have really moved in there. They have the largest container port in Freeport. They're building a mega port in Nassau, and they signed this agreement with the Bahamians, and they're lobbying heavy to build a consulate and World Trade Center in Fort Lauderdale. And that will hook up with two of their technology transfer centers, one in Boca Raton, and one they just bought, the Chinese, the PRC, just bought the Fashion Mall in Broward County. And they say it's all about business, but it's really about espionage, business, military, and controlling things. We've kind of lost the drug war. We've pulled out of Plan Colombia. We're not funding it that much anymore.
I hope I didn't have to interrupt you. Mike, thanks so much for calling. We're going to have to let you go.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk, and we've got about 3 minutes before we have to let him go. But yet, certainly it appears we're making an awful lot of mistakes, and we're really sacrificing our advantages here. We're letting the Chinese come in and really basically undermine our security. Doesn't make sense, does it?
No, and what we have today, unlike the Cold War, we have organizations like Al-Qaeda that want to destroy our system, and they have a long-range plan. I mean, Al-Qaeda is not just some little organization that has put bombs and attacked the World Trade Center. They are organizing all over, and I believe the Chinese are cooperating with them. I believe that certainly Chavez and other people that want to destroy our system, like Castro or North Korea, are cooperating with them. And they want to destroy our system. It's as simple as that. And we probably are overextended. We're trying to please too many people in the world, like Europe and the United Nations. And I think most of our policies today, whether they're about oil or even domestic concerns, we have to put national security in front of all that. We can't let people like Chavez continue to function against us. We can't let Castro continue to function against us. We're fighting the drug cartels. We're fighting Al-Qaeda. We're fighting Muslim fundamentalism. The Russians are coming back at us, and we're fighting China. And we're fighting a growing Marxism in Latin America. We have many, many problems and challenges. But I'm an optimist. I believe our system of government, our capitalism, our wealth, and our military and intelligence services will serve us well in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, I certainly hope that you're right, because it would be such a shame if this wonderful country was destroyed because of ineptitude or perhaps something else that would keep our government from doing what they should do, and that is to protect us from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. Well, John Quirk, thank you so very much for being with us. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners before I let you go?
No, I think that one thing I'd just like to say, because I was at Camp Pendleton about a couple weeks ago, and I can just tell you, the Marines and the Army, the Navy, are doing a wonderful job in Iraq. It's not like the media represents. Morale is very high. Our technology with weaponry is high. The country is still very rich and prosperous. We do have a lot of allies in Eastern Europe, Japan, South Korea, certain countries in Latin America, and even the Europeans, the French, the Germans, are coming around to thinking that they have to ally with the United States.
Okay, I'm going to have to let you go. Thanks very much, John. Bye-bye.
Okay, all the best.
God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course you've heard Mr. Quirk's view of what's going on in the world, and I would like to say that so much of what's going on really doesn't make any sense. You know, why would we be doing everything we can to build up the economy of communist China? Why would we be guaranteeing loans so they can build their nuclear plants over there? Why would we be transferring them our technology? Why would we be letting them buy up our factories that actually create the things that we need for our missiles and military technology and transfer those plants over to communist China so we'd have to buy the material for our missiles if we went to war with communist China? We'd have to buy them from communist China. Nothing makes sense unless you understand that nothing is as it appears to be. Those of you who have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to get either the video or the audio tape. You need to study it. You need to get the interview I did some years ago with the Professor Sutton called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. The video is available there. It's a classic video, and it was about 1980 before Professor Sutton passed away. We do carry his book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. We carry his book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. You have to understand, we have funded all of these enemies. We've done it intentionally. We've taken our country into war after war after war, including the Iraq War, under totally fraudulent purposes. The means of documenting that would be my talk, Iraq, the Untold Story, and the syllabus goes with that. You need to have the documentation, and then, of course, you need to help us get the information out. And we give you so many of these documents in the syllabuses that you can actually read, and then, of course, you can show to others. You know, the fact that the Japanese kept trying to surrender at the end of the Second World War, and we wouldn't let them. And you'll actually see the article out of the Chicago Tribune on the very day the peace treaty was signed saying, we didn't have to drop the bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki or invade Iwo Jima or Okinawa. The Japanese have been trying to surrender for 5 months. We wouldn't let them. I know it's true because I interviewed General Albert Wedemeyer before he passed away. And General Wedemeyer had been in charge of our military in China. And he told me the Japanese had been trying to surrender. And he always was getting the information back to Washington, D.C. But, of course, they weren't interested in ending the war. They wanted as many lives to be lost. They wanted to be as bloody as possible. Why? Because out of the horror and the carnage would come the demand for the United Nations and the world government. That's what it was all about. And that's what it is all about today. And when President George W. Bush concluded his second inaugural speech on the 20th of January, 2005, he said this, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, we're acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. Now, he put some verbiage in the middle there to confuse you so you wouldn't know what he said, but that's what he said. And what is the ancient hope? Why it's the new order of the ages? And if you go and you Google new order of the ages in on your computer, it's Novus Ordo Seclorum. That slogan beneath the occult emblem on the back of the dollar bill, beneath the fraudulent statement, in God we trust, they don't tell you what God they're talking about. But if you go into the ancient mystery religions, the goal of the mystery religions going all the way back to Babylon has always been, in defiance of God, a world secular order. When you understand that, everything begins to come together. If you have not yet read my March newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one free of charge. If you call us at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. Go to our webpage, pull down our newsletters. You'll learn so much, and of course, your job is to help us get this information to others, encourage others to listen to our programs and to support our effort as we try to educate the American people. When everything looks like it doesn't make sense, well, it's not that it doesn't make sense. You just don't understand what it's all about. We're moving into terrible and difficult times. Pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.